Well, I had written an introduction about a week and a half ago, but the Lord so altered things in the last week and a half that I felt I had to redo my introduction. So I want to begin by sharing with you a dream that I had this morning, right before the alarm went off. And then I want to share with you a nightmare that I had 3.5 weeks ago, the day after these meetings were announced. I don't know why, who enters into your dreams. But this morning, Vera Stump and I were walking along a road to this meeting. And we were just talking, and I had my little folder of notes. And I knew we had to turn left to get to where we were going. And we started turning left, and there were boulders and rocks, and we're climbing up to get to this real high building up here, and seemed like a rough way to get there. I didn't know if there'd be another lane that we could go, but we were just having a nice little talk, and we were on our way, and the alarm went off. Do you ever wish you could go back to sleep and get you and make sure you got there? But I obviously got here. 3.5 weeks ago, I had a nightmare about this meeting. My husband calls them preacher speaker nightmares. Well, in this dream, for some reason, my son Daniel and his wife Christy were sitting on the floor in Papa's study, and Aaron Hurst and Denny were there, and we were talking, and I realized I should come downstairs because it was time for the meeting to begin. And I came down, everybody was chit-chatting. I thought, well, I'll run to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom, and it dawned on me, I don't have my notes. I haven't even looked at my notes. How can I say I was burdened about this meeting and I never, in all this 3.5 weeks, I never even looked for my notes? I looked in the mirror and I had a big blotch of something on my dress, you know. And I was panicking, thinking, what do I tell them? I don't even have my notes. Well, I'm glad to tell you that that is not true. That was a nightmare. Because I did prepare as best as I know how for the meeting. But more than that, I am just astounded at the support that I have felt, especially this last week and a half. It overwhelms me. The cards and the emails and the phone calls and the prayers, I feel very unworthy, and I thank you. It is nervous to stand up here, but to know that people love you like that, the Lord and you behind me, I can go on. Why is it that it's easier in some ways to speak to a group of strangers than it is to speak to ladies that you walk with week by week? Perhaps one of the reasons is man fear, in this case woman fear, because it is a vulnerable place for me. And so I wonder what will you think of me after this time is over. Why is it easier to hear a guest speaker than it is to hear somebody who you see every week? Maybe because we're more easily critical of somebody that we see. Well, I know them and they're just, you know, they're not so hot. Well, if those two things are true, it seems like we both have a part in order to make this meeting a blessing today. I have to agree to shake those fears off and to speak unto the Lord. And you have to agree to put away your magnifying glass. And I won't be bogged down with that. And perhaps, just maybe, in spite of myself, the Lord will speak to you and bless you. Why am I standing here today? Certainly not because I'm a public speaker. I'd like to think the reason was because I have my act all together, but that's not true either. After all, isn't Denny my husband? Aren't I the wife of a godly home preacher? Does that put your expectations up here? Well, do me a favor and just lower them. Because that's true, but like you'll hear this afternoon, I'm also the wretch who jumped out the windows and ran away in our early married life, and many, many hidden dynamics behind 2004 in our life. If I had a success story to share with you because of my own efforts, then I might be proud. And you might think, oh, wow, she had all these instances in her life that led her to this place of success, and that wouldn't honor the Lord at all. So I guess it would be my desire that you would just let me be myself. If anything that I share relates to you and my spiritual track that I've taken, wonderful. This is today. I'm not where I was yesterday, and I'm not where I'm going to be a year from now. And I trust that a year from now, I will have many more exciting things to say about what the Lord has done in my life. I don't know specifically what each of you are dealing with, but I know in a group of women this size that there are some hurting hearts, maybe a very wide variety of needs, some hard circumstances, because this is life and this is where we live, and we are facing obstacles. Maybe some of you are even where I was almost 2 years ago, burnt out, weary, desperate, so absolutely loaded, not knowing where to turn. Why do I think that might be true? Because I know as the Lord leads me to be honest and transparent, it's often because there are other people who are maybe very close to the same place. In the natural, if you asked me to give a topic, I might want to give you some charts and some schedules and some organizational ideas and give you a how-to. And that's not wrong. There's a place for seminars. I think that those things are very helpful. I have gleaned from some of them also. But this afternoon, we'd rather go into the crux of the heart, where it all begins. I'm a firm believer in using resources. In my bedroom, I have a bookcase about 4 feet high and this wide, and it's full of books. How-to books. How to be a better woman. How to be a godly wife. Devotional books. Dieting books. Homeschooling books. Child training books. Inspirational books. Cookbooks. How-to. How-to. How to be an exciting lover. I just have lots of books. Why? Because I've been a seeker. Ever since I was born again, I've been a seeker. Wanting to improve, wanting more of what the Lord had for me. Seems like I've had a lot of advantages, all those resources available at my fingertips, sermons and seminars. And besides that, I have a tremendous advantage of being married to Denny. And I say that in all honesty. He is one of the godliest men that I've ever met. So why is it, with all of these positive things, that I missed so much for so many years? Well, maybe today I can give you a glimpse of some of that in such a way that it will help you or somebody that you know. Before we proceed, I would like to ask you all to close your eyes for me. I love to look at you all when your eyes are closed and love you. You know, I didn't come this afternoon to pretend to be anybody that I'm not. And I didn't come to play games. I came to bare my heart in hopes that by sharing some of my miserable failures and debilitating pain, that you might do two things. First, that you glorify God for his miraculous deliverance in my life. And secondly, that you might gain some hope and courage for your own difficult circumstances. One of the largest reasons that I'm sharing this afternoon is simply out of obedience to the ministry. They walk with God, they love us, they watch for our souls, and they sense that this would be good. I also come out of a personal love for you ladies. We have faced some incredible spiritual warfare in the last 3 weeks since this meeting was announced, and I'm just selfish enough and honest enough to tell you that I'm not willing to pay that price if I didn't see a measure of something on the other side. That I know that there are some beautiful, attainable victories for some of you that you're not walking in the good of yet. That thought excites me. And that is worth any price. As I look out at your faces, I have to say, I know the stories behind some of the smiles. And I know that some of you are carrying a load. Honesty isn't always pretty, but it's so freeing. Pretense is a terrible bondage, and eventually a killer. Mm. Few of us have come through a lot of life together. Some of us go way back, almost 22 years. We've born babies, we've raised children, we've married, we've buried. We fasted, we laughed, we cried, we had fellowship meals, we had Bible school. Lots of water under the bridge. It's very special to me to have Rebecca here. She's walked the longest with me. She knows my ugliness inside and out. A desire to seek all that God has for us will draw hearts together in fellowship as we pursue holiness. It's a solidifying agent to surrender to the Lord. But I know that sometimes some of you are sitting through church services and meetings like this in misery. Your head nods in agreement, but your heart is far removed. You think no one can understand, that there's no hope for you to get any further than where you're struggling right now. I know that the only way for you to receive anything today is to have an open heart. Perhaps you need to do something daring. Perhaps you need to personally make a decision. It is a choice, you know, to respond to God. You need to say, yes, Lord, I'll take the plunge. I won't hide. I won't pretend. I'm open. Lord, I want to go on. If a piece of my confusion relates to a piece of yours, just admit it. If a chord of my pain strikes a chord with yours, it's okay for some tears to fall. Let's just be real. My son-in-law, Andrew, once told me that he had decided to quit giving books out that had been life-changing and challenging to him because so many times people weren't ready to receive the truth in those pages. It wouldn't matter how earth-shaking what I say today might be if you're sitting there with the arms of your heart folded, saying, I'm not going to let you in. I'm going to be stubborn and resistant. So let's just end this season. I'm going to just be quiet for a couple moments. And you just ask the Lord to help you to commit yourself. Set aside whatever you were doing this morning. And just think about where you are with God. Ask Him to take you the next step. All right. Can open your eyes. Thank you. Whenever you're asked to share a personal testimony, there's a bit of a quandary as to how much to share. I turned 50 this year. Obviously, I can't share everything that's happened in the last 50 years. And that's not the goal. I'm hoping that I can share enough to give you a window of understanding of where I'm coming from, just so as to glorify God for where He's brought me from. And yet I don't want to bog down in specific sin issues. I have no desire to shock you. I could shock you. I could tell you some ugly stories. That's not the goal. It's not the purpose. Seems fitting where you're innocent to evil, you should just stay innocent to evil and be grateful that you weren't exposed to some things that others were, possibly. I don't want to compare my testimony to somebody else's. This is my testimony, and this is where God has brought me. It's only been in the very recent years that we've allowed our older children some intimate glimpses into my past, and I think wisely so. To protect them from that. But as they've come to understand several of the circumstances of my younger years, I've been amazed how beautifully they've responded. They've been so supportive, so forgiving. It seems it's caused new respect levels in their heart as they realize what we've been through, how much we've had to overcome. Denny and I have apologized many times for the rocky moments that they saw in our early married days as we stumbled and fumbled along. And to our surprise, it doesn't seem that they judge us for it. It seems rather that they encourage us because we kept going. And that it's a motivational factor to them, even though, thankfully, they'll never touch or taste some of the things that we did. The enemy's after them. He may be more subtle in his attempts to derail them, but he's after them. I don't know how many children would be represented in this room. A lot. Hundreds for sure. Every one of them needs something that's real. They don't need a mom and dad that are pretending they come to church and are something else when they're here than when they're home. That is so confusing, so damaging. Our children will walk in the benefits of the victories that we gain way before we ever did. They start at such a younger age and with a pure heart. It's not long before they're strengthening and challenging us, as you know, if you have older children. As they become youth, how they bring their devotional thoughts and what God said to them and how very sweet it is. How sweet, Rebecca, this week, as I said to you, oh, I'm feeling the load of expectation. And in such a simple one-liner, Rebecca said, Mom, they're not expecting anything from you. Their expectation is in God. Oh, yeah, that's right. Duh. So simple. So, but so profound. I grew up in what today is commonly referred to as an extremely dysfunctional home. Both of my parents were alcoholics, and that contributes to a very angry spirit in the home with lots of arguing. I want to mention a little bit of trauma of some of my abuse in childhood days, only so that you can see the load of dark secrets that I carried for many, many years. I was looking for another word to express trauma, and when I looked up trauma, it's mostly a medical term. But do you know what trauma is? It's a wound. And I thought, how fitting. Because most of the trauma in our life does leave wounds. And if you don't know how to respond to those wounds, they get larger and more gaping and more damaging. And infection gets in them. All abuse is ugly, whether it's verbal abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. It's all ugly. But I think that probably one of the most damaging of childhood abuses is sexual abuse, especially if that abuse was administered by people in authority in your life. The representation of who these people are supposed to be and what they're supposed to be, and then in part who God is. And it's a quagmire of confusion to a young child. Children ought to be learning how to ride bikes and simple things, and to have to be carrying ugly loads of abuse. Very, very difficult. It's devastating. There came a time after many instance of abuse in my life where I grasped the reality that those laps that I crawled on for a back scratch or a kind word had ugly ulterior motives time after time again. When I was a little girl, I used to think, surely sometime my tear ducts will dry up, because I had just cried so many lonely hours. Because who do you go to? Where do you go? Where do you go for help? A little child. They won't believe you. It's your fault. I'm sure you've heard others share that. During one of my parents' drunken arguments late at night, my father was permanently disabled in a fight that involved a chase and a butcher knife and a hard fall. He actually couldn't walk for a couple of years, but that incident in itself became another dark secret to stuff and to hide, because my parents chose to lie and to say that he fell in another situation and therefore they made an insurance claim. And I was very young, but I saw it. I knew where I fell. But I learned to tell the same lie to protect my parents. It wasn't until I was a Christian many, many years that I realized in the middle of explaining one time, well, my father, oh, I don't have to say that anymore. I don't ever have to say that again. I had told it many years as a Christian because it was so much a part of me. I hope you don't ever, in any small way, cause your children to lie for you. Somebody comes to the door, the phone rings. Don't cause your children to tell something that's not true, to hide or cover what you're doing or what you don't want to do. They shouldn't have to carry that load. This disability that my father suffered changed our home situation very fast because he had a good job, but it wasn't like in these days where you have anything available to you to collect money from. He got a Social Security disability, but that was all. It threw us into a lot of poverty. My mother had been widowed at 22 with two little children, and she had come to the city where my father lived and married him. He was 20 years older than her. She was a little country gal and didn't have any education, so the only jobs that she could get were bartending and all-night cab driving. Well, probably to protect herself, Mom gained a lot of weight. She became a very large, tough, rough woman. She wore men's clothes. She could out-cuss, out-dirty joke tell any man, any truck driver. And I think it was a protection for the rough world she had to face. She became very hardened. We didn't have any home life to speak of. We never sat around the table to eat a meal. Matter of fact, to sit down at the table to eat, it was piled so high with things, junk, that it was a major chore just to clear a place to eat, so usually you ate in front of the television by yourself. Our house was so filthy, and I was so ashamed. When I'd walk home from school, if anybody was walking with me, I would make excuses and walk other blocks so that they would never find out that I lived in that pink house. I didn't want them to know where I lived. I was ashamed. My dad spent all day at the corner bar, and Mom was everywhere but home, and I was the youngest, so I didn't have the freedoms that my older brothers had to go. I was the baby of the family. So it often fell on me to put them to bed, to separate them from fighting, to clean up the vomit, to try to fix it, to try to make it all better. I would plead, I would beg them to stop fighting. They're always threatening to call the police on the other. You know, that develops something in a child. It's a very common trait of alcoholic parents. The children just think if you could be good enough, if I could just try harder, somehow I could make this situation all right. Well, I soon learned that I didn't want to be home either. So I got very involved in after-school activities and community things, volunteered for this and that, and pursued my studies to get good grades. Seemed that two things back then pleased my parents. They were proud of my good grades and take me to the bar, and I'd get on top of the counter and I'd dance, and they would tell how many A's I had gotten, and people would give me money, and that was a positive in my heart because there was some acceptance there from my folks. I used to always try to get my parents to come see me in plays and musicals and that through my junior high years. One time, my mom came, and I was in the middle of my star performance. I was a Pink Panther in a dance recital, and in comes my mom, drunk out of her head, hollering, bellowing. I wanted to die. I didn't think I could ever face anybody again. But of course you do. You don't have a choice. I never asked him to come again. I had a stepbrother who was my mother's son from her first marriage when she was widowed. They knew the home situation was bad. So he and his wife took me out of the home the summer that I was 13. They weren't a whole lot older than me, but they did the best they could. They tried to make me happy. And because they didn't have discernment in those specific areas, they just did it with money and things, and they had a new home, and they bought me lots of fancy, immodest clothes, and my brother was a CB, and my sister-in-law worked at the Air Force Base, which meant they knew lots of single fellas. So they just, I had more blind dates than I knew what to do with at 13. Not good, of course. I remember sometimes feeling like Cinderella. I had red shoes and navy blue shoes and black shoes and a couple pairs of sandals and purple shoes. I had purple shoes. And tennis shoes all at the same time. And I remember very clearly as a little girl, I had one pair of shoes. They didn't fit. The shoelaces were missing. So that did bring some temporary happiness. That was exciting. The popularity and the whirlwind of that. I lived with him a couple of years. We moved to California where I had my own red convertible between the mountain and the ocean on the beaches of California. I thought I was it, you know. But even in the midst of that, quote, happier lifestyle, I was still very plagued with the past. I had waves of depression. I had recurring nightmares. I had a nightmare a couple of times a month, every month, until I got converted, and I have never had it since. It was involving my parents, and it was awful. I'd come hyperventilate. It was so distressing to me. I had a hard time opening myself up to friendships, male or female, in any deep sense of the word, because underneath all the fluff and being president of student council and all the activity, underneath there, I knew that I was dirty and I was no good and I never would be. The stains and scars that I was carrying really hindered me, haunted me. At one time when I was 16, I was committed to a mental hospital. I wasn't sleeping. I had undergone another severe trauma. And they hypnotized me. I became an inpatient. They hypnotized me so I would sleep. I've renounced all that. I have no idea what happens when they hypnotize you, but I know it's not good. They put wires all over me and had me watch drama to see if my heart rate increased, to see if I hated my father, see if I hated, you know, what they're trying to see who you are and what makes you tick so they can help you. But even as a confused, ungodly girl, I knew that man was being paid to do his job. Call him psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever he was. So I answered this way and I answered that way because I didn't know how I wanted to present myself. Did I want to present myself as a good girl? Did I want to present myself as a needy girl? So they labeled me manic, depressive, schizophrenic. That's quite a title for a 16-year-old girl. And they gave me 3 prescription drugs and sent me on my way. But I didn't receive any help. I needed God. But they didn't know to tell me that. My years in California ended rather abruptly when my father suffered a severe stroke and I left school and left home. I was on my way to being a lawyer. Can you imagine? Thank you, Lord. He delivers us from ourselves and our own goals. I returned to Nebraska where I was from. Went to my father's bedside and he did pull out of that stroke. He was in a rest home after that until he died. Back in Omaha, I landed what I thought was just a fantastic job. High class receptionist at a swinging singles club. Back then, that's what we called them. It was a travel, dining, and entertainment club where they sold memberships, and you got together with all these people at apartment complexes, and you could go to Acapulco for a cheaper price, and it was the place to be. And that's where I met Denny. Denny was 5 years older than me and fresh out of the Army, and he came in with his buddy who was coming to get a job. The Lord had other plans than that. When I look back, I always marvel how sly the devil is when he camouflages sin in our life. You know, as much as I despised my parents' drunkenness, my own drinking was sophisticated. Because it was done in nightclubs with bright lights and fancy clothes, and somehow that was different. The end is the same, but to me that seemed successful at that time. I don't know what all the factors were that led to that spiral down there. Old friends trying to bury ugly memories, rock music, all of those things contributed for sure. My mother always credited Denny with my salvation, and that's true. But before I followed him in his footsteps, the Lord, he did lead me into much more wickedness with drugs and deeper immorality. I was attracted to him for all the wrong reasons, absolutely, totally wrong reasons. But I marvel all these years later what the Lord gave me. All of the character qualities that I would now seek if I were looking, they're already there. God's been good. During the time that Denny and I were dating, we had some very stormy times. Of course, poor guy, I was a mess. He didn't know what kind of baggage I was bringing into our friendship. But I overdosed on these three drugs that they had given me. And I was not desiring to take my life. I was just trying to cope. It was a Sunday afternoon. I took a bunch of these pills, and I went outside and started walking. And I walked miles and miles and miles. I ended up at the office of where this Club America was, where I worked. And the office has outside doors that lead you into the hallways inside. The outside door wasn't locked. I went in. All the offices were locked. It was Sunday. They were not open. I would have died. I slumped to the floor, and some man, by God's grace, came in to get some paperwork that he forgot from another office and found me, sent me to the hospital. I have no recollection of any of that. That scared me, gave me a good scare about drugs, and it kept me from experimenting with other drugs because I don't have any recollection, and that woke me up a bit. Many of you have heard Denny's testimony about his godly aunt and uncle and where that all fit in our life and us coming to the Lord, so I'm not going to share all of that. I think you know that some months after we were converted, we were married, and then we went off to Bible school, which is what you did if you love the Lord, back in our Baptist setting. We jumped in with both feet, desiring to grow and desiring to be used by the Lord. Denny was very shy and introverted in those days, but he was very zealous, and so he still succeeded in the Bible college there. We were in a mega church situation. We ran over 20,000 on a Sunday morning. It was a mega church. He was eventually ordained and was an assistant pastor there with several hundred Bible college students under him, under his authority. What I'd like to do is lump about 20 years into 5 minutes. I think I can do that. Because I want to relate to the subject at hand, not get bogged down in all the different things that happened through those years. Let me just try to emphasize it for you. Here I was, this poor little girl from the wrong side of the tracks, poverty, drunken parents, trying to get acceptance by following Hollywood and being somebody, wanting to make money, wanting to be successful, trying to find my way through the mess of my home life. And then salvation comes to my heart, and with it definitely some joy, a new lifestyle, a new wardrobe. I raised my necklines, I lowered my hems, I put on undergarments, gave up slacks. The church where we got converted, we were the big fish in the little pond. You know, we were the little hippies, and everybody liked to tell our story of how we used to do all these bad things, and now we're converted, and isn't this wonderful? And it was wonderful. But they put us to work right away. We didn't grow. We didn't get our feet planted. They were desperate for workers. They put us on a bus route and teaching Sunday school. Teaching Sunday school. I knew the stories from my childhood. But I was enthusiastic and young, and that's what they were looking for. Then we whisked off to Bible school, where we all of a sudden became little fish in a great big lake. And my insecurities multiplied there, because the standard of appearance was way higher than it had been in our little bitty church. I made the foolish, unwise mistake of comparing myself to others. Here were all of these hundreds of virgin, young Baptist girls with bright eyes and big hair and makeup. They played the piano, the perfect preacher's wife, you know, in my mind. They were everything that I should have been. And I just thought, oh, Denny should have married one of these gals and he stuck with me. But I learned. I learned how to put the look together. I went to garage sales and I took wardrobe coordination and grooming classes and learned how to make up and tie and what to accent, what not to accent. So I was acceptable. And as Denny rose in leadership there, then I was Mrs. Kennison. So then I had a position. Through a tremendously clear set of circumstances, the Lord redirected our steps drastically to take a look at Anabaptist doctrine and lifestyle. And I want to say that much of the agony of rejection that I felt when I came into the Anabaptist circles was because of the junk that I was carrying. A lot of the mess was inside of me. Some of those women did make big mistakes, and I want to learn from them and not make them with someone coming in. The props of security that I found some comfort in the Baptist setting, the cascading hair and the makeup, you know, you could have just had an argument with your husband, but you put a little white and some black and a bunch of pink and all. You could go to church looking very bright, and nobody knew the debauchery in the heart. Or maybe that you were even in sin, that you were living with unconfessed sin that very day. All of that was pulled out from under me, and it was a shock. Some of you others have experienced that, and it is traumatic. You look in the mirror and you say, because there's no hair, there's no makeup, there's nothing. It's just you, the way God made you. It's the hidden man of the heart, and it's showing, and if it's ugly, it's just ugly. There's nothing to hide it with. No artificial props. So what did I do? I again compared myself. Here were all of these virtuous women who knew how to sew from the time they were this big. They knew how to can from the time they were this big. And talk about being a second-class citizen. I was less than half of a woman for sure. I thought, Denny should have married one of these women and stuck with me. You know, those women had no idea. In all their kindnesses to me, they had no idea the load that they put on me because of my ignorance. I remember one sister bringing me a big silver bowl full of cucumbers from her garden, because the time of year that we moved, we didn't have a garden. She gave them to me to make pickles out of these cucumbers. And she left and went on her way. And I looked at these cucumbers and I cried. I might as well have been told to fly to the moon. I had no idea how to make a cucumber into a pickle. I had no canning jars. I had no canner. I had no knowledge. You know, it was a mess. In my understanding, I just went down, you know, lower. My understanding of myself as a woman. Then we moved to Lancaster County. Well, compound the problem. And the expectations, manicured gardens and lawns and flower beds. And sometimes you look and you think, that's all the women do. But then you go in their house and they have quilts and cookies. And well, I have learned, and I can put on a meal for 20 people now because I have meat in my freezer and I bake some things ahead of time. But back then, that just looked overwhelming, totally overwhelming. When we came into Lancaster County, I think that some of the rejection was even stronger because we were starting a church that wasn't quite going by the standard books of the other churches. So we were no longer Baptist, but we weren't quite Mennonite. We definitely weren't in the lineage. Nobody wanted to help us. Nobody wanted to fellowship with us. And it was lonely.
God bless you for listening to the preaching of His Word. If you would like to listen to part two of this message, please press 12 now. You may leave us a message by pressing 99. To hear information about our Saturday morning Bible study, press 88. To find out how to listen to a church service at Ephrata Christian Fellowship, press 77. To hear the menu for this topic again, please stay on the line. To listen to any other message in this topic, press the appropriate extension number now.